And Nikita Nekrasov, I'm going to talk about non-commutative diffeomorphism. Really, what I'm going to talk about is the way the space-time diffeomorphisms, the general covariance transformations, are represented in a particular topological open string theory, which, among other things, produces the star product formulas and deformation quantization of the Poisson manifolds. There are several motivations for looking at these questions. One of them is rather general. Is the attempt to understand what are the what are and if are there any incarnations of the general covariance in the framework of string theory? The reason it's non-trivial is well known to, and it's the same. The problem is essentially the same as that of general relativity. If you work in the background, which is closed in Minkowskian space, then the choice of this background, the choice of the metric, breaks the space-time diffeomorphisms down to the group of the isometries of this metric, which is usually fine-dimensional group. So it was suggested many times that in order to see the maximally symmetric phase of the generally covariant theory, one has to go to a phase where the vacuum expectation value of the metric is zero.
Well, zero or flat metric?
No, flat has very little isometries. The right. Flat metric has only a finite-dimensional group of isometries.
Riemannian metric is finite-dimensional degenerate.
Right. So there is something strange about this, right? There is another limit, which is also rather strange, but more familiar to us, is the limit in which, in some sense, the metric goes to infinity. So there are two. And this is, in a sense, the alpha prime going to zero limit. Nevertheless, if we try to attempt this to go to this limit naively, we see that we rescale our fields and come back to the flat metric. So it seems that we don't gain much by doing so. Nevertheless, I will show you that there is a version of string theory of the sigma model which one seemed to be able to couple to gravity, to two-dimensional gravity, which does not require a tidy space metric at all in order to be well-defined. And since you don't require a metric, you require some other geometrical structures, you have a chance of enlarging the group of symmetries of the problem. So let me be a little bit more specific and explain what I mean by it. So let's start with a conventional bosonic string action, and I will be talking about both open and closed strings. So we have the usual metric dependent term, and I will also have a B field. Problem. So I'm denoting the, I have my wall sheet sigma with or without boundary and little sigma solid coordinates. On the wall sheet. Now let us rewrite this action in the first order formalism. So let's just go to the first order. So we, in addition to the field X, which was the map of the whole sheet into the target space M, I will have a one form, so which will be in some sense dual to X. So the action would be I'm not careful about it. and say it's too low, right? Okay. So the capital. So what I did, I just introduced an auxiliary field, which is a one form, which if one integrates out, one gets back this action. And now the capital G and theta are the things which are known as an open stream metric and the open stream Poisson tensor. So the matrix alpha prime G plus theta J is essentially the inverse matrix. So let me, I can actually erase this and work with this first order action now. One second. Now theta is anti-symmetric and G is symmetric, so theta should be theta okay. Now suppose we take an alpha prime going to zero limit, keeping all these quantities finite and fixed. So what do we get? Well, we get an action which suddenly acquired a gauge invariance. So this gauge invariance, for example, we could have started with the action with the vanishing B, in which case theta would be absent. So if this one was the whole action, then it will have a gauge invariance where you shift the one form P by an exact one form. So if this term is absent, then this is clearly an invariance of the action. And if there is a boundary, then you would require that epsilon I vanishes on the boundary. Now, in the presence of theta, this is no longer an exact invariance, but it can be extended to the one. One simply adds a term once we've taken alpha prime going to zero limit, we got a theory which is slightly ill-defined because it has a gauge invariance.
So the moment depends on spacetime or worldsheet.
This is so epsilon is a function on the worldsheet.
Oh, on the worldsheet.
But it has a target space index target space low index I. So it mixes in an untrivial way with spacetime coordinate transformation.
Theta and capital G are not constants.
At this point, no. Altogether they have to satisfy the conformality, the beta function zero conditions.
But I thought you integrated out P as you sort of quadratic.
When you integrate out P, where? In this section or?
So G are x dependent.
So G in general and theta are in general x dependent. So it's in principle, yeah. So the condition, actually, it turns out that the condition for this symmetry to be a symmetry is exactly the Poisson property of theta. So one needs sum over secret permutations of IK. So this is so if you introduce a Poisson bracket on the functions on M, by this formula, then this condition is a condition that is bracket a base Jacobian entity. All right, so this is the theory of gauge invariance, and in principle, so there are two ways of choosing this theory. The first way is to go back and introduce a gauge non-invariant operator, which was P star P, which will make some sense of the out of the theory. Or another way is to gauge fix the symmetry. So a priori, there is no reason not to do that.
So this is simply not present before you take the alpha positive.
Yes, this gauge symmetry is explicitly broken by that term. But so one could think that there is a, so if we have a family of the consistent string theories parameterized by alpha prime in some sense, mm-hmm. then there is a corner of this modular space to which is attached this family of theories, which are gauge fixed in another way.
Isn't
that
like turning string theory off? So we're going to a particle theory, and now you're saying
we're going to get more symmetries and a particle theory,
and we would have found
a string theory. Well, in a sense, if theta is invertible, if it comes from a symmetric form, then this gauge symmetry allows you basically gauge away all bulk degrees of freedom. If we work on the velocity with the boundary, then this gauge symmetry tells you that the degrees of freedom of the interior of sigma have no meaning, and only the bound degrees of freedom have meaning. So in sense, it is reducing to the particle physics. On the other hand, but theta, you see, the point is that unlike conventional string theory, where theta comes from a D-field and has to be invertible, in this limit, theta does not have to be invertible. So you have the space-time in this way will be foliated by what are called symplectic leaves on which theta is invertible, and on each of these leaves there will be some kind of particle theory, but this will be different particle theories on different leaves. So an example of this foliation is if you take M to be just R3, you can take theta to be a linear function. And then these leaves would be the spheres. So this thing is not invertible, but if you stick it on a sphere, on the constant radius, you will get an invertible form. Yes?
So do you get an equation for theta, or is it just put in a sum?
So that's an equation.
Nikita, is this equation of motion equivalent to h equals 0?
If theta is invertible, yes. So if theta is invertible, then this is equivalent to h equals to 0, which is also, incidentally, the alpha prime going to 0 limit of the normal equation. Yes? Yes.
So my question concerning sort of taking alpha prime to 0 limit, because in this way you don't get to the Sabre-Whitten limit, function that by looking at your particular action, you're going to get, you know, the propagator for x on the at one term.
Yes.
So you're not going to get a points of information about the local symmetric. You're supposed to have two terms.
Right.
Together.
It is true, right. Yes. So. Yes.
What's the relation between what you told us so far and the work of concatenating all groups?
This part overlaps a lot with it. So I'm just basically theoretically explaining that work essentially.
Sorry, is that equation covariant?
Yes, it is covariant, actually. It's in geometrical terms, it simply tells you that theta is a Poisson tensor, and that's a covariant statement.
I'm confused, but what you wrote out there has h not equal to 0, right?
Here.
About that, k by j, that's all right.
This one.
Okay,
yes. It's... If you restrict on each sphere,
then the inversion of that theta will give a B field which is closed, so which would be equal to zero. You see, if theta is invertible, then H equals to zero falls from this equation, but theta is not invertible at the origin, so it's you can't. The origin just vanishes. All right. So now I'm going to explain how one gauge fixes this theory. There is a, it turns out that for generic Poisson tensors, theta, it is not straightforward to do the gauge fixing. And the problem is that the algebra of these gauge transformations doesn't close. Closes only on itself. So normally in the BRST formalism, you would replace epsilon by a ghost, C, called C. So it's a scalar on the world sheet, scalar on sigma, and the one form on M. And then write a BRST operator, which would take PI to DC plus DI. That. And then the last formula is perfect. So it's like a commutator of these two transformations. So when you compute the square of this operator, you will find that this is zero only up to equations of motion. So this is proportional to equations of motion times the second derivative of theta. So for linear or constant theta, you can do the ordinary BRST quantization, and so in particular for these thetas which lead to Lie algebras. So the linear theta corresponds to the Poisson bracket being linear function of x. So it tells you that the coordinates form a Lie algebra. But if you go to the quadratic theta or higher or generic theta, then this is not enough. So there is a nice formalism which replaces BRST, which is called BV formalism, which lets you to go around this problem at the cost of introducing more auxiliary fields. But it turns out that the structure becomes quite pretty and more symmetric. So BV approach, which will unify, so it's in some sense it's unification of Gross fields, symmetries, whatever, and also introduction of extra degrees of, well, not degrees of freedom, extra fields, which are called actually anti-fields. So in practice, what it means is the following. Let us replace our players PI a one form and XI a scalar by a superfield, twisted superfield. So twisted superfield is just an inhomogeneous form on the world sheet. So it will be a sum of three terms for each of these guys. So I have a scalar and one form and two form, and I'm summing them all together. And the same for PI. So I will have capital P. This one is the old one. And And now let us write down the action. So the action will be defined on all of these guys all together, and we'll have a simple form. So it just, I'm just taking the old action, and if you wish, I'm waiting to continue it. Right. Yeah, so what that means in practice, I mean, you just substitute these expressions and expand and pick out the component of which is a two form. So in particular, this term would produce theta I reg d. So let me call this guy xi1 and let this term xi2. This will be ti2 and ti1. So this will couple theta with xi1, and then there will be a next a term which will couple the one form pi1 with dxi.
So
what's
capital theta ij?
Capital theta ij. Okay, so it's just a theta where I substitute it's a old theta, little one, with capital X substitute.
What are the transformation rules for theta when you change coordinates?
It transforms as a tensor.
It is a tensor.
It is a tensor, yes. Okay, now, at this point I will have to switch notations because otherwise I will confuse this theta with it. So I will call the Poisson tensor pi, which is more suitable for the Poisson tensor, but unfortunately it's not the notations chosen by Zabek and Whitman, so, but not everything is perfect. All right, so this is the action. It contains lots of auxiliary fields, so we need a procedure which will get rid of them eventually. But at this moment, so previously in the BRST formulas we also had a symmetry, which was a BRST symmetry. It turns out that in these formulas and in BU formulas, the symmetry appears as a part of a more interesting structure. Namely, on these fields, antifields, there is a symplectic structure. Which is familiar to people doing open string theory, which is odd. So it couples bosons with fermions. I forgot to mention that, of course, this x, little x, was a bosonic field. It was a map of the Rorschach into the target space. Now this one form component will be a fermionic field. It is multiplied by an odd quantity, which is one form. This will be a boson. Here the situation was the opposite. The one form was bosonic, it was coupling to the bosonic map. Then this guy would be fermionic and this guy would be fermionic. So this symplectic structure couples bosons with fermions. So the fermionic part here, for example, theta I will be coupled to the two form, which is a boson, and so on. And then it turns out that in this symplectic structure, this action obeys an untrivial equation. The so-called B master equation. So the Poisson bracket of S with itself is zero. I mean, if omega was bosonic, the ordinary symplectic form, this equation would be vacuous, because the symplectic form would be anti-symmetric. But when you replace this by odd quantity, this is an untrivial equation. And now, you can, given the function S which obeys this equation, which is true in this case as a consequence of the Poisson property of pi, you can generate a symmetry of the action by taking any field and adding to it a Poisson bracket of this field with the action. In particular, the transformation of the field Pi will involve the external derivative plus this guy, and then the transformation of the coordinate will be again the derivative if you expand this in components.
These are superfields,
yes, but if you expand them in components you will recover the some of the formulas which I wrote in the BRST approach, but you'll recover extra.
So you always get asymmetry in any theory in the BV formalism from this, right?
Yeah, so
it so happens that symmetry is the one that you started with?
So the symmetry which you get in the BV formalism is to be thought of the BRST symmetry. It's a kind of a BRST symmetry.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
So this action S is a fermionic object.
No. This one is fermionic object, but this action has an addition, an extra D in here, which flips the fermions in the bosons. So the action as a whole is a bosonic. It's a number. I mean, it's
so why the S with S is not vacuous?
Because omega is odd. So it's equation. This equation you can write this as equation as omega A B T S phi a left my ds. So you take a left derivative with respect to phi I, take a right derivative with respect to phi b, I guess you need to flip a and b, and it's an untrivial equation, so you can check that if you actually compute this you will get a term which will be proportional to the Jacobi identity. So this is actually proportional to pi d pi d p it's not real. Okay. So unfortunately the life doesn't stop here because one actually now needs a procedure to get rid of the auxiliary fields which we introduced to get finally to the theory which will have some well-defined propagators. So that requires a little bit more work. So one actually adds two more auxiliary multiplets, which I will call chi H, and there are the anti-field duals. So this will be scalars. This will be fermion. Chi will be a fermion and H will be a boson, and so this will be a two-form boson, and this will be a two-form fermion, and so one adds to this symplectic structure the terms which couple fields and antifields, like that. Then this action is extended in this way. This is not the only possible way. Actually, the real distinction between various types of topological strings starts in this term. So if you, for example, change the chi for H and chi plus for H plus, you would end up with what is called the type B topological string. But when you proceed this way, you get a new kind of topological string which wasn't found in the beginning of 90s. So this is neither A nor B topological string theory. It's this is something new. So we call it type C. But then it was
there's a more dynamic content than topological string, because you have particles here.
It is topological string in the sense that this the symmetry which corresponds to a BRST charge, if you wish, this BRST charge is scalar.
For me, your symmetry is almost trivial. It just says that the Borg string is not dynamic, only the boundary x is dynamic, right?
Okay. So
I mean, look at your transformation. I mean, your epsilon is arbitrary in the work, but vanishes at the boundary. That means that's just boundary.
There is a long standing confusion about the name of the notion of topological string. It is not true to say that in a topological string, the string itself is non-dynamical. When you write down the action, when I will finally write down the action, it will look like almost like an ordinary string. Well, in this case, it will look like nevertheless. So it will have well-defined two-dimensional propagators. You will have all degrees of freedom are there. It is just that if you treat this scalar supercharge as Dirichlet free charge, then you say that all degrees of freedom are, in sort of, in a sense, gauge artifacts. But if you treat this Dirichlet charge as a twisted supercharge, which is what usually people do in at least in type A and type B theories, it just says that you have a class of observables which have to do with BPS states, which of which you have a lot of control, but you have lots. You have lots of other observables which will have non-trivial correlation functions. So it's really a question of what we call a gauge symmetry and what we call a remnant of a supersymmetry. So
I guess that's better to say just the topological theory is maybe it's the subspace codes of the Hilbert space intervals and does have. You know, finite or even fewer degrees of freedom, or else we're all
going to
get very confused.
Okay.
I mean, there is this larger theory, like you said,
right?
Dimensional
domain
of topological theory. There's
also a string
for
the
two-dimensional
diagonals
that are topological. Is that what that is? Yes.
Type D.
No, I think it's...
You know what I'm
talking about. Yes. I don't remember if Cofields are underhills. I think yours.
They look a lot like the underhills, like there's a PI alpha.
Really? Okay. But we should discuss it. I remember asking this question, but I don't remember what was our conclusion. Anyway, so the question which I'm interested in today is the target space covariance of this section. So. Unfortunately, I have to introduce one more notion in the game, and this is the actual gauge fixing. So in the eventual story, in the final story, we're not going to integrate over the whole space of fields and antifields in the path integral. So we only want to integrate only half of the space. So we have a space of fields phi A and the antifields. But this is too much. You see, in the original theory, I only had this guy, and theta I was like a ghost. So at most, I would like to end up with these guys, and then chi and h are like Lagrange multiplier for the gauge fixing condition. So essentially, what we want to do, we want to get rid of half of the variables. And while we have a symplectic manifold, it's odd, but it's okay. So it's an odd symplectic manifold, and we want to get rid of half of the variables. So the natural thing to do is to go to a Lagrangian submanifold. So the Lagrangian submanifold would be determined by a generating function, which in this context is called gauge Feynman, which would be a function of half of the variables, and which would allow you to express, let's say, antifields in terms of fields. And so then you integrate over the space of fields. You substitute here antifields according to this formula, and then you are done. No, you're not done because there is also an issue of what is the measure on this space of phi's, but not worry about it. Okay, so the naive gauge Feynman, which will work in most of the cases, looks as follows. So you take chi, which was a scalar, it was an odd scalar, and you multiply it by d of star pi 1. So this, it depends on the field chi and on the field p, and that's the only thing which it depends on. So
star on the world sheet.
Yes, it's a world. So far I didn't have any either stars. So it will allow me to express, for example, chi I plus from this formula would be, expect right here. Sorry. So chi I plus would be just d star pi 1, hi plus would be 0, and what else? So when everything is substituted, the theory we end up with will look as follows. So on the, let me call this Lagrangian sum manifold L, kernel L. On L. So it will be our old friend pi 1 dxi plus pi 1 star dhi plus d theta I star d chi I, and then the terms involving pi. So it will be term pi I j, pi I 1, pi j 1, plus derivatives, which I don't have time to write down. So what you see here, what you find here is a curious system. This is a bosonic beta gamma system. It's a curved beta gamma system in a sense, because the gamma field, which is x, takes values not on the flat space but on the manifold. H is, roughly speaking, takes values in a tangent space to this manifold. So we started with a theory which had maps of the world sheet sigma into the manifold M, but now we gained extra scalars which should be thought of the tangent vectors to M. So somehow we are studying maps of sigma into TM. On the other hand, there are boundary conditions in the case of the sigma with boundary, which I was skipping, and these boundary conditions will actually tell us that on the boundary this guy H vanishes. So what it means is that we replaced this theory by D-brain wrapping the zero section in the tangent bundle. So it's essentially the same dimensionality problem. But here, what we see is the second order system for the fermions. So in more conventional topological strings, the situation is the opposite. You have a bosonic second order action and a fermionic first order action. So these theories are related by some sort of weak rotation in the superspace. You change.
This is chi,
right. And as you see, all the indices here are contracted without metric, so we never used the metric on the space M so far.
Sorry,
yes.
Sorry, what is H in the D-brain language?
So if you think of the space-time manifold, a tangent bundle to M, and H is a coordinate along the tangent direction. And so this is the picture. So this is my tangent bundle to M. H is a coordinate on the fiber, X is a coordinate on the base, and my D-brain is at H equals to 0. Okay, so H describes the transversal mode.
This is transversal.
Right, transversal mode.
Sorry, the momentum doesn't seem to have, things trying to get to H. You've expanded your X space, but not the momentum.
Well, you see, the original problem, which I forgot not to mention, but it was a sort of the origin of this gauge symmetry, was that P had two components. It was a one-form on the world sheet. And so after all this work, what we actually did, we matched now the degree of freedom. Yes.
Does this H has a equation momentum or something like that?
No, I think it has an operation of an extra coordinate. So it's
maybe you are getting some non-commutatory. Not on the manifold, but on the phase space, that's what I'm suspecting.
you know, phase space would be T star.
Yeah, that's phase space, yes.
But this is T, so it's not a phase space.
What would happen if we restrict it on the Lagrangian manifold before enlarging, enlarging the phase space? Before adding time and H?
Well, if you like, I mean, a priori, you don't have to enlarge the space. It's just that you need to come up with some interesting gauge fermion so to get a non-degenerate theory.
Well, suppose that I just...
If you do that, then you'll get some theory. Very interesting question. Just go ahead and find this fermion. Okay. Okay. So what I'm... Okay. My primary interest was the space-time diffeomorphism invariance. Now, the reason why this theory is better than the theory we started with is that it involves only the Poisson structure on space-time to regularize things. So, and the Poisson, unlike metric, which has only finite-dimensional group of isometries, the Poisson tensors have typically infinite-dimensional group of isometries. So, pi is better than G because pi has a lot of symmetries. So each Hamiltonian vector field generates a symmetry of the Poisson tensor. So, unfortunately, I have to explain now what is the... if I want to discuss diffeomorphisms, which were more or less manifestly presented in the original formulation where we had a scalar, which was a map of sigma to M and its dual, P, now when we extended fields to superfields, the issue of the diffeomorphism invariance is no longer trivial. And here's the reason why. So it goes as follows. How do you promote the ordinary diffeomorphism, so ordinary change of coordinates, to the superfields? Yes. What is the question?
This may be a small confusion, but in the standard case where pi was a constant, that's just area preserving diffeomorphisms.
Right.
Yeah, you're talking about. But that's not a symmetry of the quantum theory. I mean, with the Moyle product.
This is actually the core of my talk. So in what sense these are the symmetries of the Moyle product?
Okay, so you're saying at the classical level there are these symmetries, but...
And they will be deformed. They will be deformed at the quantum level. And if I have... Well, my goal is to explain how these symmetries are deformed, in fact, in these formulas. So 5 minutes on making this action covariant and then on the deformation of the symmetries. Okay, so we need to promote this transformation to superfields. And the idea is simple, use analytic continuation. So again, we have these little functions, the ordinary bosonic functions, x tilde of x. Let's just substitute into them the capital X. So at the level of the components, what we'll get? We'll get that xi goes to x tilde I of x as it should have done. Now xi1 transforms as a tensor as a vector, in fact. So that's also simple. Now if you go to the second component, then it's already starts getting messier. So you get the first term which will transform as a tensor. But then there will be a second term. Since we're expanding, and there are two ways of getting a two form out of this expansion. The first one is to differentiate once and pick up a two form, and the second option is to differentiate twice. So we'll get something like that. All right. And then for P, we want to, so the way P will transform will be even more complicated, because what we actually, what we are ultimately interested in is that P section is preserved. And so in the superfields, P will have to transform as a one form. But at the level of, what measure? Okay. But when you expand, you'll get many, many, many terms. And so when you make this covariant, it will actually, well, let me just give you the final result. So let me call this guy W. It's some function of x and p, which in our particular case is quadratic in p, but a priori there is more freedom in choosing this. It turns out that in order to make these things covariant, one has to introduce a connection connection in a tangent bundle, I think. Right. So it's a guy with two lower indices and one upper index. So this action is extended in a non-trivial way involving these auxiliary fields.
Sorry, you don't have a metric, but you're adding a connection.
Right.
And so this isn't metric compatible.
There is no metric, but this connection doesn't have to be, doesn't have to come from any metric.
Okay.
So all these different orbits preserve this PV Ochsenbach structure.
Right. Yeah. Right. And the need for these extra terms is, so it is, you can still get away at the level of P and X, but then when you make a chi and h covariant, then it gets really messy, and you get a formula which is reminiscent of formulas from the supersymmetric signal models, although this is at the level of the extent, I mean, it's BE space. So
the central question is this one, that the Noyal bracket has, you know, nothing like all the symmetries that the original beta have. And so you can just ask me mathematically, you know, what extra geometric data should I prescribe to specify a particular Noyal bracket? And the lazy answer to that question is to say, well, there are some special coordinates in which it's just the primary Moyal bracket, like in the coordinate transformation to those dark blue coordinates. And that's a valid answer, but a geometric answer is to say that there's some connection which is compatible with the symplectic structure and preserves the symplectic structure. And then you can define geodesics with respect to that connection, and straight lines in those lengths are what are described by these simple coordinates. But the symplectic compatibility condition doesn't uniquely pick out the connection, unlike the metric kits. So you have a choice.
How much of a choice do you
have? Well, at this point, gamma is actually, it doesn't even have to preserve anything. So this is not the connection which Mike is talking about. It's the reason I didn't say those words is that I'm not sure this is.
That's what you're aiming at. That's just the real content at the end that has to come out.
Okay. Maybe, but I wouldn't bet on that. So
you're not putting any constraint on your connection? You're just choosing a connection?
Just any connection will do. So any connection will make things covariant in the sense that...
then you're only going to get diffeomorphisms preserving the connection. I mean, you're only going to...
Well, the connection transforms under diffeomorphism, so you will know how. You see, the problem is. Perhaps in order to explain why this connection is better than no connection, I will have to write the formula for the star product or something like that. So, You see, it's the one of the applications of this topological string is calculation of the deformed multiplication law on the manifold with this Poisson structure. And if you didn't put any connections here, and also if you start being covariant, and this Gage-Feynman also starts involving yet another connection, which I will just write number tilde. So number tilde will be d plus some connection gamma tilde d x. So the application is the following. You set up a... Among many observables in this theory, there are boundary observables, which can be arbitrary functions of x. So any function of x on the boundary of sigma is invariant under this BV transformation symmetry. So a valid question is to calculate a three-point function in the sigma model. So given two functions on the boundary, given two functions f and g on the manifold, one can calculate this partition function if you wish. Could also insert the delta function. So I'm thinking about the disk, sigma being disk with three marked points on the boundary, 0, 1, and infinity. And then the correlation function of these three operators will be some number, and let's call this number f star g at the point x. So it's a number which depends on x, and one proves, as was done by Kansevich first, that if you define this new star by this formula, then you get an associative product. Let me call this star like that. So it means that there is an identity involving this statement is proven is by considering the four-point function, which is actually zero by ghost number. So you introduce f at the point 0, g at the point, let's say 1, h at some point sigma, which will be a running point, and again delta function of x at infinity. And as in any string theory, these four points have a cross ratio, so one has to integrate with the location of this h, and this integral reduces to a boundary. So it first of all it's zero, which I have no time to explain why it is zero, and this zero can be expressed. I have time? Okay, good. Good. I'll pick it. Okay, so first of all, let me say that this is zero, but this zero is a difference or sum of two boundary contributions. And so these boundary contributions you get by factorizing factorizing this amplitude in two ways. So one way is when h approaches the delta function at infinity, which by conformal transformation you can make look like f approach g, And another way is, so delta, delta x. Another way is when h approaches g. So you get, and then summing of intermediate states in this case reduces really to integration of the just integration of the manifold. This delta function will remove the integration, and so these two diagrams are equal to these two particular products. So this is one, the first of series of identities which one can prove about the correlation functions of various operators in this theory. Now, as far as the explicit computation of this expression is concerned, one actually has all the tools, because the theory which I wrote had well-defined. First of all, one can compute this in the absence of the perturbation pi. So if pi is zero, the theory had these terms. Plus Hermions. So if you integrate out p, you will essentially get the constraint that dx is zero. And so all the points on the boundary at infinity have to be mapped to a set, to the same point, which is fixed by the delta function to be x. And so this correlation function will be just the ordinary product f of f times g at the point x. But then we have this extra interaction. So one expands in this interaction. Okay. It is convenient to work to conform to map this disk to an upper half plane, and to treat this delta function as a symplectic boundary condition at infinity. So one has now so if we have a single insertion of the operator pi, we would have to calculate this correlation function, and then pi is integrated, so it's d to sigma pi j of x capital P capital pi capital pj. So these are again superfields. I'm just collapsing the whole expression back so that the notations are, I mean, so I don't have to write any things. Now, if you read off the propagators of the section, you can collect them all together in the formula for the superpropagator, I mean the propagator between the superfields. So if you have a superfield P at the point Z and X at the point W, then the propagator is delta IJ. And then some exact form, local exact form actually. So it's this D is the total D, D with respect to Z and D with respect to W, and phi is it's a certain angle function. If I'm not mistaken. So in this term you have 2p's, so they have to be contracted with 2 axes, and the only non-trivial way to contract things, this is, okay, I forgot to say, this is supposed to be a normal ordered expression, so you don't contract p with x, which is inside of pi. So this will give you pi ij dif djg times the integral of d to sigma of d phi 0 sigma, which d phi sigma 1
solution. So I have, so pi has two legs coming out, which correspond to p. And a priori has as many legs coming in, which correspond to derivatives of pi. So this, if you expand this in x, you'll get infinite number of vertices at a priori. Now this term, so this is some number which I don't remember. We call it 1/2. But then there are other terms. So things get more and more complicated. You can, at the second order, have this diagram. And then it is at this term where this connection which I wrote starts entering.
Are these interactions singular and they hit each other?
So when they really hit each other, this function is ill-defined. It's an angle function. Yes. So a priori one has to choose some contact terms.
Is that what your connection?
No. I don't think so. So the situation is as follows. You can choose contact terms being zero, and give some prescription for how you treat the situations where the points come close to each other. Yeah. This involves a certain computation of the space of the points. If you choose the contact terms being zero, you'll get associativity and all the things are present. This connection, okay, at least so it seems at the moment. This, the presence of the connection in the covariant action will actually be manifested in the presence of extra vertices. And so at this order, in the second order in pi, I will have, in addition to the terms which usually people write, namely, so that when you have two terms like that, you can get there are several contractions. So there is a contraction like that. There is a contraction so this is the contraction which is present in the constant pi case in the Moore bracket, which will give, then there is a term which will involve the pi differentiating itself. So there will be terms like that, plus or minus d f d2g. And then it seems to me, by looking at the action with the connection present, then there are extra vertices which will actually correct this to make it a covariant expression. So I will have expressions like that. Number two. And so the reason why it is better than no nabla is that in the standard approach, when people just choose a coordinate system to fix the gauge, doesn't choose any connection, one gets an expression from which it's very hard to see how the whole series is transformed under the coordinate transformation. Now, when you have an expression which involves a connection, you know how it transforms. You just replace a connection by a connection which is transformed by coordinate summation. So it makes calculations more doable. However, one can leave...
The connection to be flat?
No. So there is some...
Associativity is anyway...
There is some prescription for... I mean, this perturbation series will give some ordering prescription for these nabla's, how they enter. Yes, associativity is actually independent on the gauge fixing. You see, this connection enters in the gauge fixing, and associativity is really a consequence of the master equation.
It should be flat, but what if you're already using one that's not compatible with time?
Well, pi gets differentiated, so you get all possible crap you can get.
So this is one part of the story. So this is the story which makes the subproduct was looking covariant. There's another part of the story which is again the question of how the diffeomorphisms actually act on functions in the theory which is deformed by pi. And the single model is quite suitable for answering this question, because in the theory we start with pi dx plus w plus what, the diffeomorphisms were essentially global symmetry. So the so there was a current which generated transformations corresponding to vector fields for each vector field on M. There is a current, okay, which is again written, which is easy to write in terms of superfield, and then one has to substitute again the expression for the antifield. So it's just the most naive thing you could write. So one should really think of P as of the d over dx. So the current is like that. Now, if we have a current, we have a way of making it act on the operator. We just have to integrate the current around the operator. Now, in the case of the boundary operator,
it is arbitrary diffeomorphism.
At this point, it's an arbitrary diffeomorphism. So a priori, it will. I'm really thinking about the theory PGXI, and then W I consider as a perturbation. So this theory has an exact symmetry of arbitrary diffeomorphisms, and then W's will be transformed into each other or preserved depending on the choice of diffeomorphism. So now I have if I have a single point on the boundary at which I insert a function f of x, I get a state of the open string. So if I choose to do a radial quantization, then this will create a state. And I can now act on this state by the charge, which is the integral of my current. I cannot take the integral over the circle around the point because I'm sitting on the boundary. But my boundary conditions actually allow me to take the integral over a semicircle. And so if I act on this by this charge on the function, or on the state, I will get a new state and new function, in a sense, created by new function. So QV acting on F will give me a new state, which I will call curly LV acting on F. Now, let us compute what is this curly LV is. Well, the current is PIVI, so I just want to compute the correlation function, essentially. And then, to calculate what the function is, I will have to evolve the state all the way to infinity and pick up its value at the point x, fixing the boundary conditions at infinity. In the disk, if you write this picture in terms of a disk diagram, what we have is the following. We have a disk, I have one mark point on the boundary at which I insert x, f of x. I have another mark point on the boundary at which I insert delta function of x of infinity. I have still this. The two points are not rigid. I mean, there is still an unbroken conformal symmetry. So if I insert a point inside, there is one dimensional moduli space, actually, which over which I will integrate. So my current is integrated over this curve. You can... Okay. So this is the formula for this curl L, and let's calculate what it is. So I have this insertion of this PV operator. It has a single P, so I can contract it with F once, and so after a single contraction I will get the classical term VI differentiating F, the usual derivative, but then I also have pi's curling around, and so they will dress this this formula, so the next term will be something like and so on. So there will be an infinite series. So that tells me how the naive diffeomorphism is dressed by this interaction pi.
But is this a derivation of the algorithm?
Very good question. So now we have to check whether this is indeed the symmetry of the star product.
I don't think it is.
The claim is, which is again derived by looking at these various factorizations, is that if the lead derivative of pi is zero, then it is a derivation. So it is a symmetry of the star product.
Locally, be some star
commutator
with some function.
Right. So there will be next formula like that. And if it is not the symmetry of the star product, then there is a term which will involve a correlation function in the shifted background. So, as you expect. So the term comes proportional to LV of pi. Now, one can ask. So two things. So first of all, if V is a Hamiltonian vector field, so an example of solution to that equation is that pi G of H. Then it turns out, then one can again work out the real identities, and to prove that LV of F is a star commutator of F, but not with H, but with a function phi of H. Which is I think so. Phi of H is given by the following series. Phi of H at the point x is given by the correlation function of x at infinity equals x and h at some point z, which is it doesn't depend on z. So you insert no operators on the boundary except at infinity, you insert this function h of x in the interior, and you compute all possible contractions. So it turns out, well, this is a trivial operation for the constant pi, in which case it will be this usual commutator, star commutator. For the model product, this is a usual star commutator.
Sorry, you're choosing the z, or it doesn't matter?
It doesn't matter. So you just fix z. On the disk, you can... It's a rigid situation with one point on the boundary and one on the bulk. But then there is the first non-trivial term is a three loop term. So it's corrected with three loops. And there are some this diagram tells you how to contract the indices. So there is this dressing, non-trivial dressing of functions which generate the star product.
Is there an exact form for the kind of pi you wrote there before, which is linear in x?
I don't know, really.
So, what does theta mean? Does that mean that, I mean, in the usual case, when theta is constant, does it mean just a wire order or something like that?
If pi is constant, then phi is an energy.
Oh.
So these are all effects. So these are all effects of non-trivial.
So if pi is linear, then we just stop it. A couple of orders or something. It's fine.
No. There are these are called wheel diagrams. In fact, you can have an arbitrary. So you draw a wheel. You put arrows like that, and the diagrams like that. I think. Maybe actually it could be that for linear pi this could be summed up into something nice. So I suggest to look at Kantsevich paper. He just give you the reference. He discusses them definitely. What is the reference?
Oh yeah, that's the case where there's some kind of Baker Campbell.
Yes, no, it's like it's some formula which involves this x over sine of x over 2 expression. So you do things like that. All right. Now, one can ask, what is the algebra which is generated by this L sub V's? So does it look like the ordinary algebra of vector fields on the manifold, or is it something else? And that's also calculable. So the commutator of LV1, LV2 turns out to be not equal to the LV of the commutator of these two guys, but is the star commutator with a certain function, curly F, which is now given by this series. So this is to be integrated. So the first non-trivial term will be a two-loop term. The one-loop term is vanishes, as one can check. So this is the first non-trivial term. You can so for this, for the constant pi, this function can be computed explicitly, and it essentially measures the difference. So it has to do with the difference between the star commutator of the functions of the Hamiltonians and the Poisson bracket, because the ordinary commutator of vector fields is generated by the Poisson bracket of two Hamiltonians, while this commutator is generated by the star commutator. So there is this difference term which compensates for that. Now, there are two ways of looking at this formula. One is to say that the symmetry of the classical theory has got deformation, or there is, in a sense, an anomaly. And this term is the manifestation of this anomaly. Another way is to interpret these operations L of V as some sort of connection, and then this will be a formula for the curvature of this connection. So the difference between the two operations corresponding to vector field and the commutator, which is also reminiscent of anomalies. So anomalies do have to do with the curvatures of some bundles. And so it turns out, it's a recent work of Cattaneo and Felder, that there is no intrinsically topological reason for these connections to be not to be flat. So one actually add to this naive operation LV, so the way the vector field acts on the boundary operator, some other operation, so that so that we will commute. However, there is no, so far there is no field theoretic derivation of this correction term gamma, and my conjecture is that it has actually has to do with the accurate covariant gauge fixing of the action. So the thing which I presented before with this auxiliary choice of connection, my conjecture is that if you compute the operation LV in the theory where the gauge fixing was done using the connection, if this connection which I was using was compatible with the Poisson structure, then the resulting thing would be flat. And then this allows you to glue things globally on the manifold. But that's just a conjecture. So I have to apologize for not giving the references before, but giving them at the end. So this talk is based on the joint work with Laurent Bayou and Andrei Losev. And unfortunately, we were doing this for such a long time that many, not most, but many of the things which I told you about today were already published by Catania and Felder in two papers. And that's about it. Well, Kida, I'm sorry for being so... Yeah.
This, everything you said is based on perturbative expansion.
Yes.
It never converge.
May never converge. Sometimes it does converge. Well, for
that's converge. Yeah. That's about the end.
Probably even.
Maybe the linear, but yeah. Most, but for the case you're mostly interested in. So,
well, we don't know.
What?
I don't know.
I thought they never converge. Greg told me at one point.
No. David, I've told you about series which don't converge.
No, there are certain cases where you deny this answer and you can get that answer out of it.
Sorry?
You know there are cases where you...
Well, like obviously.
More non-trivial ones.
So quantum groups correspond to quadratic pi.
S2. And that converge?
S3.
And well, the way quantum groups the things there converge, I don't quite understand. Some, you know, it depends on whether you have to use the some special properties of Q, like it being Q root of unity, so that the series converges because terms vanish by some.
Well, I think the strongest result, I don't know whether people literally know this, but I think if you go around, people would say this is likely. I mean, there is this much older idea of geometric quantization. Yes. And so people wrote down that for a while. And so in particular, if you have a Kähler manifold, and then you know how to do this. And this one just, it is more like physical quantization and conveys the kind of intuitions that you normally have. Like if you have a compact manifold, you expect to get a finite dimensional order of space out of this. So this compact manifold is a base space.
Yeah.
And then if you quantize it, it should be finite dimensional. And so the sort of thing you might imagine is if you choose H bar to agree, with the finite, one of these finite dimensions that starts to come out, then you could take this series and it would converge on that finite dimension subspace or whatever.
And then you can actually sum it up.
Yeah, but you can't sum it up anything on general functions or something, but on this finite dimensional subspace.
But in turn, if I think about it as a sigma, there could be non-perturbative contributions as well.
Yes, there could be. I don't see them in this formalism because naively the path integral localizes on the point-like maps, so it's hard to. Yes.
I just have a different question.
Okay.
I don't know if that's from.
Naively, I don't see the possibility.
Maybe I don't look at the right things, but there's also a problem. So if you compare things falling from geometric quantization, then I don't know how to, is it useful or not, because there you get answers which are only valid for pi, assuming some discrete values. So if you have a series which is like a series in 1 over n, which is only well defined for n being an integer, how much do you know about the analytic inclination to arbitrary?
Well, the question is, what is the true character of the answer? And if the answer is defined, you know, leave it to un, then that's the answer. If somebody comes along with you, it's a yeah, it's not the same kind of object.
Well, I thought there was another quantization called group quantization or whatever, which also agreed with the concept formula for the particular case where the manifolds were group manifolds. And there you could sort of sum up the series, you could sort of exponentiate it like the Moyal product, it was an exponentiation.
I think fully algebra.
So that would be a non-trivial context, I think.
So what is that, fully algebra?
Yeah, in case of a linear pi. So in the case of linear pi, you get an algebra of, which is a universal enveloping algebra of the algebra. Okay. But
this is the quantum group when you get it.
It's not the quantum group. It's simpler than quantum group. Quantum group responds to quadratic pi. Yes, correct.
So if you think about open string scattering,
yes.
If you look at high energies, the amplitude is set as by an infinite number of ordered
energies. Right.
Does this algebra have anything to do with
it? I think these word energies are part of these word energies which you're referring to, I'm sure. If I'm not mistaken, the word energies you were studying did have to do with factorization.
I'm asking the question because you take a closed string current and you integrate it around open string quickly.
Yes.
It looks a lot like your dipping work, the implementation of your dipping
work. Right. The slight unusual feature of this theory.
Some kind of algebra.
Yes, yeah. It is an algebra.
Well,
the LVs.
Well, you see, it's an extension of the algebra of vector fields on the manifold by.
God, is that some cosine?
It is cosine. Yeah, the unusual feature of this theory is that all these functions are the tachyon operators in conventional notation. These are tachyon operators, but they all have dimension zero because alpha prime is zero.
Perfect.
So you can write down this for constant pi.
Yes.
Directly.
Absolutely. No, directly, and again, for. I think I wrote it. So for constant pi. LV on F is the star commutator.
Oh, it's just this.
Yeah.
So you can exponentiate and you get the unitary operator, which is what you expect. Yes, what?
Yeah, so there's a related situation where you want something like a non-commutative diffeomorphism, which is looking at the non-abelian Born Enfeld action for a D-brain, or for many system of many D-brains, which is presumably somehow related to the background B field. Can you use what you said to say anything in particular about that?
I cannot, but this certainly is one of the applications which I would have in mind. Yeah. There are other applications as well which have to do with this non-commutative diffeomorphism or quantum Hall effect. If you read Lenny's Askin paper,
it's somewhere when H is linear.
If H is linear, then it's a translation.
Okay. What's the gamma for?
But then can you get gamma?
Can you get this gamma? Oh, I don't know. Where are you? Oh, no, but that, nah. In this case, of course, you can take gamma being zero, because then for linear H, which corresponds to a V, which is just a shift, right? So VI would be just some shift. So these guys commute, right? The commutator is zero. And of course, the commutator of the commutators with linear functions is zero. in this case, this energy will be satisfied for trivial gamma. Yes.
I think some, in the beginning, you were talking about this additional symmetry, which you get when you go to first order formalism. Did
yeah.
it later become part of diffeomorphisms?
No. So the diffeomorphisms is a global symmetry of the sigma model. And that symmetry was a gauge symmetry. So this gauge symmetry only tells you what are the observables which you allow to calculate. So, and it was gauge fixed and forgotten. But the diffeomorphisms is this global symmetry, so it has to be manifested in the correlation functions, and this is what we are looking at. Okay.